to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 206. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's hardware, software, or whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am joined once again by my good friend, the door-to-door geek, a.k.a. the Linux Maven. He has some sort of human name, too. I think it's Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Dor?
I'm doing decent. Another week, another drastic change in everything.
Yeah, that is, you know, that is life. That happens. Although you've had some hardware/software complications from potential system updates, but I'm sure you'll get into that later.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. This is one of the reasons why I used to never apply updates to anything I owned, because security, schmicurity.
Another wrench in the mix.
I mean, I like for years told everyone who said how stupid I was, well, here's my IP address, hack me.
Right.
And of course, no one was ever successful with it. So I don't know why all of a sudden I started doing updates, but you know.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, well, things happen. Yeah, yeah, crazy week around here too. My oldest just started soccer again, and he did his patented move, of stand in the middle of the field and pretend like there's not a game going on, and he's the only one on the entire planet.
Nice.
So he's
normal.
He's making me question the money I spent on equipment for him this year, and if he'll play next year. So I guess he's having fun. But
well, isn't that all that matters, Cody?
To them, yes. To me, there are some other considerations.
No. There are just a couple.
He can have fun at home. It's cheaper. We've already invested in the entertainment options here at the Cooper compound.
Right.
Speaking about that, I did the very smart thing. You must have seen, and this was online a few weeks ago, the guy that was doing the live broadcast for the BBC, and then his kids wandered in into his office because he was doing it from home.
Oh, that was fantastic.
Yes, yes. The day I saw that, I was like, I'm going to go get a lock for my door. Not that if my kids, yeah. My son, I think, has wanted in on a show or two, and I've politely defused it, but yeah, I installed a door on my office, a lock on my office door, and now I'm not seeing stuff missing from my office all the time. I just lock it when I'm at work, and I unlock it when I'm home, and yeah, things are much better. I now feel more compelled to do cleaning and reorganization here, and knowing that it won't be undone during the day with the kids.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. My kids will randomly just come down here for absolutely no reason, but they don't care about it. And I can't. There's no door for me to lock, so I have no choice but to live with it.
Mm.
And I'll say, for those people watching the video feed, not only am I orange and my background's miscolored because apparently now my white balance lock isn't working, but I'm showing a tab on the Brave browser, and the image is literally flickering. So I'm going to guess, and this is a separate computer, because the webpage ain't flickering. Just the video flicker. So I'm going to guess there was then an update in also OBS.
Ah, okay.
So I really don't want to reinstall two computers before tomorrow night when I record the mini PC show, but...
Well, here's... You got to use the Cody Cooper method. You got to have a hard drive laying around, right?
None that are easily put into either of these computers. The one is a laptop that I'd have to take apart, and the other one's a desktop that's under, behind the desk, standing on top of things that would take at least, 10 minutes to get buried out.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, I guess reinstall it is, but yeah.
And then maybe an image of the default OS.
Yes. I will say, though, you've never looked more neon in the whole time I've known you.
Are you trying to say I look like Trump?
I did not say that. I would never say that.
Thank you.
Although you do look pretty huge,
huge. Yes, because I don't know who else is this tone. And it's not that I hate any politician any more than any other politician, but I don't really know anybody else in the world that's this shade of color. So that's why I said it.
Right. All right. Well. Speaking of Brave, I did install it on a couple of machines. over the weekend. I put Vivaldi on my main rig here, and yeah, I was surprised at how neat they were. I'm still trying to kind of dig through and see what some of the differences are, but the overall presentation and ease of use, I mean, right off the bat, I mean, there's not much you can really mess up with a browser, but you'd be surprised.
Well,
in Explorer. But yeah, very, very happy with the options between the two of them so far. I'm still kind of defaulting to Chrome while at work because they do a lot of stuff on Google Docs. But yeah, I'll probably slowly migrate to one or the other once I figure out which one's going to work better for my daily workflow here at the house.
Yeah, I'll say neither either. I can't remember if it was have plugins at all or unbelievably scarce. So like what I had to do, for instance, I use LastPass, you know, because I like my stuff to be secure and I don't want to administrate everything. Mm-hmm. I don't want to audit my own network. So, you know, I let other people do that and I give them a thing called money. And with both of them, I couldn't find the LastPass plugin. So what I had to do was I had to download the LastPass application. I can't remember what it is. And I basically just sync my passwords down, which you should be doing anyway. And I just copy paste them into the browser. That's the only hang up I had with those browsers. But I will say, Vivaldi has the first time launching introduction theme chooser, tab layout chooser kind of thing down pat. Unbelievably smooth and nice. Brave, I like the fact that whenever you start a new page, it gives you like a running tab on how much it's quote unquote protected you. The ads blocked, trackers blocked, HTTPS upgrades initiated kind of thing. I literally just deleted my entire local config of Brave because I launched it a couple minutes ago and the screen was jet black and it didn't change. So that's why it says it has zero ads blocked, zero trackers blocked, and six HTTPS upgrades that have happened. But I think both of them are doing something right that the other two browsers aren't, is what I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. Just within maybe the first half an hour or so with Brave, I was just navigating to, you know, my normal everyday sites. And it was crazy to see what was being blocked and how many just from going to the homepage and maybe clicking around some links and stuff. It was pretty nuts.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I hate to say it, but we get numb to it.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like.
And numb and blind.
Not there, it's like, right, right. And then when it isn't there, you're like, wow, this is refreshing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like one of the things I kind of likened it to was recently, gosh, I was watching some series on Hulu, and I just got sick and tired of their damn ads. Because, you know, it's every, 7 or 8 minutes. I was just like, fine, pay the extra $4 a month, go ad-free. And then I was sitting there watching something with my wife, and she goes, you know, we haven't seen an ad in a while. And I just said, you're welcome.
So Hulu finally fixed their pay model, because it used to be you didn't pay, you had like 20 ads an hour. If you did pay, you had 10 ads an hour.
Well, it's $7.99 a month for Hulu Plus, excuse me. Which still has some ads, and then it's guided by, you know, selective experience. So you're like, oh, which ad experience would you like to have? And it's sort of a fork in the road, one of two types of ads. But then with the, I don't know what it is, but it's just the next tier up. It's $11.99 a month, which I figure, you know, $4 a month, wow. Just a little over, you know, 10 cents a day. Yeah, it's worth paying. Just to not have the time, especially since, you know, then, like, I was plowing through, you know, like, seasons just in the background. And there's nothing more monotonous than, like, trying to play something in the background while you're doing work and hearing the same ad for, like, the seventh time in 2 hours.
Right, right. And I'll say the back catalog is the alluring thing with that YouTube.tv, whatever, YouTube.com/TV, is supposedly launching more and more and more. That, everyone keeps saying, is going to be the one of the things that is going to be successful. The bad thing about that is I do believe you only can go back in time 30 days. So you can't watch entire seasons on that. Even if you DVR stuff, it only will save your DVR thing for 30 days.
That makes sense. I mean, all that has to be stored somewhere, right?
Well, and the gimmick is, you know, in actuality, they're saving everything for 30 days. And when you subscribe to it or say you want to DVR it, you just have access to it. That's all.
Yeah, I haven't quite delved into looking at that yet. Even though I saw it pop up, I was like, "Oh, it's probably something else I'll be having on the horizon." But yeah, we'll have to wait and see.
Right. Yeah. My wife made it very clear, if having to watch anything is any more difficult than it already is, I should sleep very lightly.
Right. We're so spoiled now. It's just like, yeah, oh, I have to navigate to this other large video library to try to find the show I want. Oh, forget it. I'll just watch something on this app that's already up and loaded.
Well, she has the DVR thing so honed. Whenever she turns the TV on, the only thing she ever does is press the DVR button and see what's re-recorded and just watch that.
Oh, but
so there's no.
But she has to scroll like up no and channel. Down, though, right?
Well, yeah, but there's no channel surfing. There's no changing channels. There's no preview guide. There's no looking at what's coming on when. All she ever does now is just go to what's recorded, watch it. Because it's literally, she can't watch it all. No. That's a gimmick.
No one can. Yeah. Well,
I'm sure somebody can. Well, the guy from PCU could. Yeah. But see, he was trying to make yes, his thesis. But, so that was good.
But he was specifically trying to see if and at any hour of the day, if you could find a film with either Michael Caine or Gene Hackman in it.
Yes.
And if you don't get that joke, you got to go watch PCU. One of the best comedies from the 90s, bar none, hands down.
Yeah, you have to go and snag the bee.
That weasel snagged the bee. All right.
Yeah, and that guy in that movie to me was one of the most shocking performances of all. Because you know who right?
The guy that's Jake Busey.
Now, were you the one that told me that last week?
It probably was, yeah.
Because I didn't realize it, and I was told, and I was like, no.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. And I tell you, that guy gets into a role, is what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, he and his father are both amazing. I mean, even though Gary is off, you know, a little off on the wayside now, but yeah, definitely both very talented. But yeah, he definitely got into character there. But yeah, those teeth and that voice totally give it away.
Yeah. I will say, I think the first thing that we should talk about, I moved up in the notes, was one of the things that you bookmarked.
Oh, definitely.
The what color, orangish colored elephant in the room?
Yeah. Yeah. So after either change of heart or realizing that convergence was never going to happen, Canonical finally decided to put a gun in the back of Unity's head. And now, effective April next year, with the release of Ubuntu 18.04 LTS, standard Ubuntu will ship by default with GNOME instead of Unity.
Right. Now, really quick, you said convergence. To the people that aren't, you know, keeping up on all this kind of stuff, how would you describe convergence?
So, I'll address convergence by explaining what the idea of Unity. So Unity was a desktop environment created by Canonical that they were going to start shipping with Ubuntu specifically so that they could have the same experience on the desktop, on the PC and or, you know, laptop type of environment, also on the phones and tablet environment. They would all be the same. So essentially convergence between all of the different types of computer platforms that you would have, to where it's not, I'm learning how to use this on this device. Oh, but then this flavor, it's a little bit different. It would look exactly the same. You know, the icon panel on the left, the color scheme, everything. So in theory, it's a good idea. But the fact of the matter is, for those of you who are not aware, they could never really get, when they first did, it wasn't through Kickstarter, it was through Indiegogo, the campaign to get the phone. That was like over 5 years ago. That fell through. They fell way short of their goal. And
what millionaire
what
says,
yeah,
I need money?
Right.
And then who says, oh, that millionaire needs money. Maybe we should help him out.
Let's give him a chance, guys. And you see, I have mixed feelings about it because, in essence, like I really like the idea, and I didn't want to make a joke about, you know, taking it out back earlier, and I wasn't trying to knock it, but the overall vision I supported. I do think that's important, especially if when you're talking about, you know, gaining market share, if you could, and because when you're doing when you're creating any sort of product or any sort of a brand. For instance, if I see a billboard, a magazine ad, whether it's a web ad or, you know, like something video wise, it should all match in, color scheme, theme, overall how I feel when I can, when I consume those types of advertisements should all fall within the same spectrum. So I respect his vision, and by him I mean Mark Shuttleworth, the billionaire in question, as it were. But for whatever reason or another, I mean, they hit a lot of roadblocks. And honestly, I think that he was trying. It's more. And here's the thing too that I do respect, that he was eating his own dog food, so to speak. Not saying when we get all this off the ground, we will then implement Unity within Ubuntu, so we can have a experience across. I mean, a like experience across all the platforms. He put it in there maybe a little too early, maybe before it was fully baked, maybe before it was deemed usable on nothing but the latest, beefiest hardware. Because let's be honest, I mean, you and I have addressed over the years that it's a bit heavy.
Oh, heavy is a very nice way to put it. Yeah. Bloated.
Yes, yeah.
It's bloated. It might as well have been a Windows desktop, in my opinion. I loaded it, and on most devices, I had to immediately install a different desktop.
Yeah.
Now, granted, you know, I don't have a $2,000 laptop. I don't have a $3,000 desktop, but it just didn't seem good. I think one of the behind-the-scenes perks that he expected was, A, he expected a lot more people to help community-wise, to help develop custom Unity apps, where it, with the pipe dream that doesn't exist in computing in reality, is coding once and having it on all platforms without having to rejigger, without having to recode, without having to recompile, without having to change formats, without having to change frameworks,
right,
any of that.
Right.
The closest thing we got to that is Java, and come on.
Now, on Ubuntu, within Unity, weren't those lenses? Is that right?
That was one of the things that they touted, was the ability to make these lenses and cross-platform without any code changing on all your different platforms. It would just work. I'll say this. A millionaire doesn't become a millionaire, in my opinion, without taking risk. That was a risky
talk. Yes.
A millionaire doesn't stay a millionaire unless he has the ability to admit failure and fault and move on. I'll say, to me, his only fault was it took him too long to do this, because anybody looking at Ubuntu for phones has to admit it's been dead actually for 2 years.
Yeah, and it's...
The amount of resources they devoted for 2 years is next to nothing.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, because I got to say, Unity as an experience, as a desktop environment, I didn't mind it. I mean, it made sense. It wasn't hard to navigate, even, I mean, I'm talking right out of the box, even for a basic user. Like, I had it on, actually, when I built this machine almost 3 years ago, I installed it on it, and we used it for a little while. And by this machine, I mean, at the time, it was mid to high range gaming PC. I mean, 16 gigs of RAM, a nice i7, you know, SSD and everything. And I still had issues running Unity on it. So, but that being said, like, I stuck my wife in front of it, you know, Windows user, barely uses Linux unless she's on a machine in our home, and had to ask maybe one or two questions, and then she was off to the races. So, and I would say the same for a lot of other, well, not a lot, some other desktops that we have access to, but my only negative experience with it was the crashes, was the system hog mentality that it had. I didn't have any other issues with it whatsoever. It was just the fact that it was just really, really heavy. And I did test, gosh, it was like, I think maybe an alpha build of the Ubuntu phone image on one of my old Nexus 7s. This is years ago, and I talked about this on the show. And same thing, you know, I was like, hey, this is actually pretty cool. You know, it definitely felt exactly like the desktop experience, of course, without the, without the swiping. The swiping is a little different to get used to. I was like, okay, this makes sense. Handed it to her, handed it to a friend of mine. They're like, oh yeah, this is pretty neat. What is this? Explained it to him. I was like, yeah, this will eventually also be available on phones, and you can have it on the desktop now. They're like, oh, that's pretty neat. But yeah, I think that it's one thing to be ambitious. It's one thing to realize when to cut your losses. And who knows? He may have been keeping it alive. And it was a lot of it was alluded to in Mark Shuttleworth's sort of memo that he released about a week ago, explaining the future of the company. It's all speculative, but who knows? He may have kept it around this long trying to shop it around to get more support while keeping, you know, while pumping money into it to keep it alive. So we may never know the exact reason why it was up and running for so long. But also, in this community, the overall open source and Linux community, it's I think it's more beneficial for a project to stay its ground, because it would be one thing if, like, they gave it a year's worth of releases, you know, two cycles worth in Ubuntu, and then pulled it out. I mean, how silly would that have looked in hindsight? What do you think about that?
I'll just put like this: if we were a village and Unity was one of the members of the village, we as people years ago would have went vigilante style and just killed them. Because let's be for real, from day one, we had issues. It was a fork of GNOME 2 that changed the side. It did. Let's just really start from the history. This is all by memory for me. They changed the size of the minimize, maximize, and close buttons. People had a fit. They had thin scroll bars that they insisted was better and that everyone complained about for at least a little while. They then took the file menu at the top of every window and put it on the top of the bar Mac style.
Uh-huh.
Everyone for over a year said that bar is in the wrong place and it should have been in the other place, and it should auto hide when it starts and it shouldn't auto hide when it starts. The Unity tweak tool, because none of the features that end users wanted, and the Linux users are particular folks, but none of the features to modify the desktop were ever enabled by default. You had to download a third-party tool,
yes,
tweak tool, in order to customize it in any way to make it a more comfortable experience. Mm-hmm. It was a horrible attempt at being like Mac OS X, and I'm ashamed at how long it took them as a company to get rid of it. I feel like it was held on to for sheer spite, and it just took too long to get rid of. And I think it's painfully obvious. I don't read nothing because I don't need to. The reason he got rid of it was money. Everything with these companies comes down to money. I'm sure he's now refocusing people, reassigning resources, mm-hmm, because the server market is where the money is at. I really think what he wanted was the community to take more of a responsibility in the desktop. And now, of course, because it's been announced that it's going to be killed, we have a fork.
Yeah.
That begins with the letter Y, unit, or something like that. And sometimes Linux users don't stop and ask if they should do something, and they just do it. I will say this. Some of the steps Ubuntu has made in the last 11 years or 10 years or whatever has been really smart decisions, really good decisions. Some of the decisions have been horribly bad. And I'm not sure if it's because it's ruled by a committee or because it's ruled by an individual person. These are the kind of things that only the company can really answer, and they have to be honest with themselves. But I definitely get the impression somebody was not being honest with themselves about that desktop for 3+ years. Or they just didn't. Now, I'll say this. I do believe John O'Bacon, in his heart of heart, wanted to be the community guy for Ubuntu. That was something he seemed like he really wanted to do. But Ubuntu seemed to act more like Windows in the sense of, you're not a community, you're the users. You don't tell us what to do. You just report bugs. If you want to contribute code, you can, but you're not really a community. And I think that was one of the things that actually drove him away from that company. I look forward to their server distribution. I look forward to going back to a standard desktop with built-in tweakable tools that are nothing like GNOME 2 was, but at least they're better than Unity. I honestly hope that they don't completely forget desktop and desktop users and desktop-centric tasks and tools, but I don't know. I'm not convinced.
Yeah, it's going to be definitely interesting to see what happens over the next 12 to 18, 24 months. But I will say that it's been at least 3 years since I've even run an Ubuntu with Unity. I went back and forth between, actually, I mainly, well, yeah, as far as Ubuntu goes, the only thing I really installed Ubuntu-wise in the last 3 years is it's always been Ubuntu GNOME, I tried the Mate Edition. Didn't really like it. I'm just not familiar with the desktop.
Don't let Martin Wimpress hear you say that.
I can give a detailed review. It wasn't for me. I'm not about to bash it.
Well, and that's the whole thing. All of these desktops are about personal style. Yeah. And whoever liked Unity was somebody who would stick out horribly in a Linux crowd, and everyone would look at them weird.
Right.
Because we're already weird folk. And for them to stand out, that's saying something. But I do think Mate, and here's the thing, Mate and Cinnamon, I think, are perfectly usable desktops for a huge amount of the people. But like you, I load them and it's just like, no, this is like either time travel going backwards, and I don't like going backwards. I have nostalgia for certain things, but that word started out as a classification of a disease,
right,
back in the 1800s. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So let's not try to have that too often.
Right.
They just didn't work for me. Honestly, I hate to say it like this. I found more affection and more usability and easier workflow running KDE than either of those tools.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that this is the beginning of something much bigger. It's not going to affect my day-to-day because I was already using the Spin, but do you think, I mean, I don't see them continuing to have a separate GNOME version, do you? Would that make any sense? Unless it's some other... go ahead.
Well, I'm sure they're going to have their own tweaks.
Right.
But I don't think they're going to be major.
Yeah, yeah. But you were speaking about the Unity tweak tool. There is the GNOME tweak tool, excuse me, as well, which does add a lot of the functionality that I like.
Ditto. But I also believe that's an officially supported tool. I could be utterly wrong.
I'll have to look into that.
But I honestly thought it was, because from the default installs of all the OSs I've had with GNOME, I can access that tweak tool without installing anything.
Mm, okay. All right.
But here's to me, here's the real black sheep kind of thing. The thing that I don't hear people mentioning in anything, in any sort of, and I'll use this word loosely, competition, when you have one team completely drop out of the competition, it only makes room for somebody else. And I think Ikey has an opportunity in the next year or year and a half after this change to make significant impacts, improvement on the amount of people who see his desktop every day.
Yeah, and you're speaking about Budgie, of course.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but Budgie. Sorry, I didn't say it. And here's the real reason why. I do believe he is more in touch with normal people, normal people's task, normal people's workflow, normal people's usage. And by normal, I mean Linux user usage. And honestly, from what I've seen, he's unbelievably nimble. When he decides this needs to change, this needs to do that, this shouldn't do this, a day, 2 days, 3 days, maybe at the worst. With Unity, I mean, just to change the position of the minimize, maximize, and close was painful for the most part. Yeah, and I think this is the opportunity for things like him to just really skyrocket. And I don't know who's better poised right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using Budgie on this machine right now, and I have for at least 6 months, maybe 9 months. I love it. So yeah, go ahead.
Well, and it doesn't break.
Yeah, no,
I haven't had any breakage when I do updates.
Never had a crash. Ever.
With stinking Unity, every time I install it, in under a week, I'd boot it up, I'd log in, and I would get a crash warning.
Yeah.
Every time for 5+ years on every computer I've ever loaded it on.
So to sum it up in 5 words or less, what would you say about Unity effectively going away as a mainly supported desktop environment? Not talking about the fork. Yes, those people will still have their cake. But what's a tight message that you could use to encapsulate your feelings on it going away?
Nah, 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 nah. Goodbye.
Okay.
I mean,
I could sum it up in 2 words: just good riddance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to be like David Spade in Coneheads. I'm not going to say it will be missed, because it's not going to be missed.
No.
And I'm sure people are going to load Unit with a Y and praise its things, but I don't think this is going to be like old GNOME 2, metamorphosizing into Mate, and Cinnamon, I think, it's going to literally just have its little bit of users and not get an update in years. Kind of like the Awesome window manager.
Who the hell uses Awesome anymore? Oh, wait.
Not many people at all. I don't think it's had a significant update now in 8 years.
But more so, I would say that I am happy for Canonical, because now with this shift in their focus, they should be able to hopefully use those resources to do something even better. But only time will tell. Who knows? Dor has some opinions that he said here on the show, and I'm more optimistic. I hope that they do something greater for them as a company to be more self-sustaining, and then also the community benefits from it. And at the same time, I'm looking forward to it.
Oh yeah, don't get me wrong. It's a great opportunity for mm-hmm. them. Change is good, and it's a question of what they make of it. And I'm really going to be interested in the next 2-3 years to see just how far it's going to be.
And here's something I just did the math on. Not that it was too hard, but it's been actually when 1804 rolls around, Unity would have been the default for 7 years. How times wow. have gone by.
Oh yeah.
Oh geez. All right. Well, I think we put enough of that to bed. If you were as we always speak about at the end of the show, but I'd really like to hear the community, our community's opinions on this. So please send an email into podcast@linuxthestrestofus.com with your thoughts on Ubuntu switching back to GNOME and dropping Unity as a not only as a default desktop environment, but as a project altogether. Be interested to hear what they would say on that.
And there's one of those failure things that I completely forgot to mention, and I'm really sorry I forgot to mention, the Amazon Lens. That sent people into
yes.
a tailspin. Oh man! Ooh, you know.
And we might as well address that, because you don't want to kind of tease it, because this is probably the last time we will talk about Unity overall ever. But yeah, I think that was in maybe 2013, 2014. But there was an Amazon Lens installed in Unity by default, which gave Canonical information as to what you were not only purchasing but also viewing on Amazon. And I mean, Stallman threw his hands up in the air, a lot of privacy advocates threw their hands up in the air, and it because it was by default, it wasn't optional. I mean, you could go and disable it, but the fact that it was there, and that's, I mean, wherever you fall on the privacy spectrum, like, I can understand from Canonical's perspective why they would have done that. Do I agree with it? No. If it was just made optional, maybe if it was touted and advertised, like, hey, this is something you could do, and for those people that wanted to do it, it would have been a lot better. But the way it went down did sour a lot of people. And then, of course, you could say that could have been the downfall or the the nail in the coffin for many other of those types of lenses that they were planning, but the backlash from the community was so great that they probably decided to just kill it altogether.
I'm pretty sure there was like quantum mechanics going on, and the day that Canonical launched Unity with the Amazon Lens, at the same time, at a different place in the world, because of that, it caused another reaction, and that was the Patrick Stewart Star Trek The Next Generation facepalm meme to, I think, get created. That's how bad that decision was.
It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah. Because, very poor communications to the people. And that's the one thing. A lot of operating systems I'm finding now are assuming from first boot, from first launch, that you are advanced or pretty advanced computer user. All they had to do was, the first time you loaded up that desktop, hi, I'm Unity. Here's a new lens. It does this. And if, you know, they would have just said, and if you would like to disable it, click here. People would have been mad, but it would have blown over much quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, let's see what else we got here. Hey, Dor, do you run a VPN at home?
No, because I don't care. But the reason I put this in the note was because, again, everybody completely panicking and completely flipping out over something that was almost a little bit misleading. Our fearless leader signed a declaration, I believe, stating that there was going to be a change in the laws in how ISPs can share or sell how they can gather, share, and sell your personal quote-unquote information. A lot of it is metadata related, but it is still valuable data. The one huge false reporting, though, was that it was changing. Well, here's the thing. It was changing. Near the end of Obama's presidency, he did write a thing saying it will be illegal for you, an ISP, to take this data and share and sell it. It was never enacted. The way he signed it, it was not even going to go into effect, I believe, until the beginning of 2018, next year. So it never was in play. Now, because it was never in play, but the ISPs saw that it was going to end, they didn't act on it. So they didn't change anything. They didn't start all this gathering of data, sharing of data, selling data, because they thought it would have been a worthless endeavor. But at the time, it was perfectly legal to do. The only thing our president did was basically make it so that didn't happen. So they've always been able to do this. They've always been able to do this. It hasn't changed. People need to stop freaking out about it, number one. Number two, I and people like Leo Laporte are the only two people I've heard, because I listen to him, that's why I said it, for years, literally at least 8 years, he said the number one most dangerous entity in our computing lifestyle is the ISP. Nobody has the possibility to gather more personal information on us, period. Not Google, not Microsoft, not LinkedIn, not Facebook, not Microsoft, not Linux, not Apple. Nobody can come remotely close to the ISP. And now for everyone to start freaking out, it's like, you know, there's been a hole in the ship now for 20 years. Why are you starting to worry about this now? You need to worry about this the whole time. And because of that, I don't, and it's just like I said, I think last week, if I plan on killing somebody, I'm not going to tweet about it. I'm not going to write a Gmail about it. I'm not going to put it in a Google Doc. So I do that with everything. Everything I do on all my computers is intended to not be personal, to not be damaging. And, you know, granted, I've been looking up stuff like diabetes information through my ISP. Who doesn't know I have it? A, I said it on this show. B, it is in my doctor's record. My insurance company knows because I got a medication for it. So, you know, I'm not the one who is worrying about these kind of things, but everybody else on the planet seems like they are. So here was a Paul O'Brien article on Tech Radar, the best VPN solutions for Linux users. The number one I have to say out there that people have to check out if they are looking at being more private with their data is private internet access. And really, I'm saying that because of how long it's been among the most trustworthy VPNs on the planet. He lists, you know, a couple more, but I will say if you're going to look, that's one to look at. He does bring up actually good topics in this, because this was one of the articles I shared to my Android app, Say It, so I could hear it as I was looking through it. They make some very good points about what to look for in a VPN, why to look for these things in a VPN, and how to be sure that you're getting what they actually say that you're getting. So this was a really good article. It's going to be in the notes, and I encourage people, if you're at all concerned with your personal private information on your home network going through your ISP, you need to look at this.
Yeah, because, I mean, we know that when it comes to you being online, I mean, let's just face it, you're a reckless individual who just doesn't care.
Oh, very.
There are zero certain things given in your household. Mm-hmm. But other people might have things that they want to protect, who feel like it's an invasion of privacy if different entities have access to the information, and I completely support that. So having these options is good. But what I will say, and this was pointed out in a couple of articles I read, because I've been researching a lot of this too, is that right now you're starting to see some very attractive offers when it comes to VPN services that may not have been around that long, or that are now offering, you know, like a free app, you know, through Android or iOS. And just like anything else in life, if you're shopping around for a VPN service right now, Do your research. Don't pull the trigger on something that you don't know, you know, the quality, the reviews, the cost of. And chances are, much like most apps, you know, if it's free, you're probably the product. So they're probably doing something, you know, shady on the back end with that. And we've seen reports of that, you know, for years now with some of those apps on both the major mobile stores. So I read over a part of this article. I'm still deciding. But yeah, private internet access. And we only say that because we know a lot of people who have recommended that to us. We don't have any sort of deal with them. We're not trying to push it. We don't have an affiliate link, nothing like that. So. However, if you go to, what is it? Let me see here. Yeah, thatoneprivacysite.net. And yes, that's actually the name of it. It compares most, if not all, the VPN services over a wide variety of topics. So you can use that as an excellent resource to sort of shop around on top of, like, you know, these top five, top 10, our recommended, whatever. To do a little bit more research, because there are ones you can run locally on your router, third parties you can run, you know, through software. For instance, private internet access now has its own official Chrome extension. So if you're a big Chrome user, that's another reason to possibly run their product. So yeah, definitely do some research. But if this article helps you come to the decision of a product, please touch base with us in the future and give us your perspective on how you helped to protect your online correspondence and identity and how the product worked for you. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And to be honest, the place I would use a VPN most, more probably, is on my phone coming back into my house.
Yep.
That's the place where I would probably use a VPN.
Like when you're tethering on the go?
Well, not even that. Just when I'm out and about. And because if there's a company I trust even less than my home ISP, it's probably my mobile ISP.
Right.
Because they have even more hyper-focused information, all conveniently through one stream, mm-hmm. you know, because they know what shows I'm looking up, what movies I'm looking up, what showtimes I'm looking up, all the health stuff I'm looking up, all my email things I'm looking up, all my banking stuff I'm looking up, all the chat clients I'm using to communicate with people, everything goes through that one. So if I was to use one, I'm pretty sure that would be the one I would look at. And that... For that, I would literally just take an old Android phone, load up Servers Ultimate, click VPN and or open VPN and have that work. Or I would just load it up on a Pi, because I trust myself emphatically, because, you know, I don't have multiple personalities. And it's not that I don't trust the other companies, but I know the only problem with trusting any company is every day, you know, something can change. Mm-hmm. You know, they can be sold off, they can be bought, they can be traded, they can be... You know, that they can have a change in ethics or anything else.
So they can overbook a flight and then do a Hunger Games style lottery to see if you're going to get pulled off of it in a violent fashion, you know, to make room for a crew member.
I tell you, man.
Dude, here's the thing.
How can anybody be that ignorant this day and age to know people have phones? They're going to record this mm-hmm. stuff, dude.
Yeah, I would say that that incident alone was one of the ones lately that I've seen the most angles on.
Yeah.
In widescreen and portrait. And here's the thing, folks. Listen, I understand if you're in duress and you're in a situation like that or if something horrific happens, but please just turn that phone 90 degrees. Let's get some landscape going.
Well, yeah, don't hold your breath waiting for that one.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, it really stings me because I flew United almost exclusively until I flew out to Cambridge and did the Alaskan Virgin thing, yeah. Which I'll definitely say I'll never go back, but man, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Only in a, America. And to be honest, the thing I like about it is the more people that focus on that, the less people that focus on me hating me or trolling me. So yeah.
As a quick aside, when we're talking about, online privacy, have you heard about the Chrome extension Honey?
Don't believe I have.
No. So it's an extension that you can install within Chrome. It might be available on Firefox as well. But it'll auto populate if you're shopping on any website, it will auto populate like the best coupon code for you.
Okay.
So because it was like I saw some advertisements like, well, it's like free money, and, you know, whoever, you know, quoted that, I was like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. I'll try installing it. But man, the access that it wants to your browser history and to alter the experience you have on web pages, I just saw that and I was like, forget it. And I didn't install it, man. It was like a red flag on top of a red flag. It was pretty weird. So, but I mean, some people will want to save that extra 10% when they, you know, buy their books or, you know, that $5 off of a $100, you know, Starbucks gift card. But yeah, it comes down to, I mean, just like with security, you know, that the human element will always be the weakest point. So,
oh yeah,
figure out where your beliefs are, your morals are, and use that as a compass. But don't compromise in one area just to get up in another, because then it's like, was it all for naught? Probably.
Yeah, just not smart is what I'll say.
Yeah,
and I mean, I do believe there was a rash. I think is the correct word, of coupon. I want to say ActiveX like controls, where on Windows boxes you would be like forced to install them, and then when you did, it installed malware, ransomware, rogueware, whatever kind of thing. And this is now just, I mean, to have good intention with one of these things, I think is difficult, is what I'm going to say. So yeah, I'm sure I would have looked at it and I'd be like, huh. Maybe I'll just trust my ability to do a Google search.
Right. It's always a few clicks away if you just know what you're doing.
Well, just like anything else, once you learn how to do it, it's easy.
And we've already spoken a little bit about some crowdfunding earlier on this episode, and obviously it's in this day and age. I mean, you're seeing these different solutions pop up everywhere, but I have never heard until today about Open Collective, and you brought this to the show. What can you speak about it?
Yeah, I'll just say I always have an interest in these, and I really hate saying the word crowdfunding, because every time I open up Twitter, I end up blocking 50 different accounts, because all they're doing is posting spam about crowdsourcing or VR. And these are not people I ever followed, nor do I want to follow, but they keep appearing in my stream. But crowdfunding is here to stay. It ain't going anywhere. Okay, it's going to be the future of how a lot of things get done, and I can see it only becoming more popular with time goes on. So why not have niche crowdfunding websites focused on certain things? I love the idea of an open type of crowdsource sites focusing on open source type projects, because we all, I think, want, some people want car-related things. Some people want sports related things. You know, some people only want IoT type of things, but some people only really like supporting open source kinds of things. So if you feel that urge, you want to support open source in other ways, in growing projects or proposed projects, this might be cool to look at. I don't know if it's going to gain traction, but it's the kind of thing that honestly, I just like the idea of it. I'm not going to say it's going to be any more or less trustworthy than any other crowdfunding site. I think they're all just, you know, play at your own risk kind of things.
I'm optimistic for it specifically because I know that in years past, I've personally contributed to open source projects, but it was more of me knowing, hey, I've used this piece of software, or I've met this developer at a con. And let me go check their webpage and see if I can, you know, throw them, you know, a little bit here and there. But this, I think, is going to be a great resource because you can flip through and for those open source projects that maybe aren't on it yet, I would say at least look into it, because for the some of the projects that I've wanted to donate to, it's not been super difficult for me. But the more hurdles that you can remove from people that you want to support you in whatever you're doing, the better. And to have it all aggregated, for lack of a better word, in one area, being able to cycle through and look at a bunch of these different products. Cause I mean, we've heard stories of people before just like, you know, looking at maybe the, scrolling through Kickstarter and be like, oh yeah, I'll give you this and I'll give you that. And, you know, donating a little bit here and there. So hopefully nothing but good comes from this. And I read it earlier when I was going over the show notes. I have yet to actually get on it, but I would be interested to see how how much of a, hopefully explosive growth you're going to see as far as projects that are going to be available to be contributed to over the next 30, 60, 90 days.
Yeah, and I'll say that thing, if it gets traction, I'm going to keep my eye on it to see what kind of things I can find on it. But like, I can tell you, the first thing I know that I notice, and it's because of, I want to say Aaron something on who appears on Twitch shows, which I still, I'm one of the people, I still subscribe, I subscribe to 90 plus podcasts. So I'm going to subscribe to a Twitch show here or there. But IndieWeb is one of the things that one of the guys who's on the Twitch shows, I believe this week in Google, possibly once in a while. And he talks about, I believe IndieWeb is one of the things that he talks about, where it's basically, it's trying to push people to not let sites like Facebook, you know, own their content, but instead giving, trying to help people own their own content in a simple way. It is a system that also helps you like push content into other services, whether it be Twitter, Facebook, or anything else. So if you browse through, don't be shocked if there's at least one thing that you hear about, you know, oh yeah, they're here. I really do encourage people, go click discover on the top right hand side of the page and just take a look, see if there's anything there. You'll be surprised. It wouldn't shock me if you'll be surprised that there's something there that you like. I'm shocked that it's an open source website, yet I see two categories, one called politics and one called refugees. That's interesting. Not interesting enough to click, but interesting.
Right. Okay. All right. So you speaking earlier about being such a big KDE lover. Why don't you tell me about, was it Tillix?
I only got a chance to look at this very briefly, and one of the people that piped up on the intertubes was Joe Heck, believing this was nothing more than a rebranded terminal, which I'm not going to say he's wrong. I will say it says right in the headline, try Tillix, a new terminal emulator in Fedora. So either someone's doing good marketing and just figured out how they could call it something new, and it's really the same thing over again, or is it really something new? I will say, when I look at Fedora applications, there is a certain beauty in simplicity sometimes that I see that looks really appealing, period. And this is one of those apps that when I'm looking at the screenshots of it, it does just look like simple goodness in being used. It's one of the terminals where you can basically split the terminal screen, launch more sessions in just one terminal window. A lot of people like terminals like Terminator because of that very feature. So if you're one of the people that like to have multiple sessions in a single window, then you might want to check out Tillix. I'm sure it's in Fedora now, and I'm sure it's going to be on other distributions soon enough. So you might want to keep your eye open for this. My terminal is typically whatever the default terminal is installed in the OS.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, and I guess one of the main features is the fact that you can tile it. Unless you're doing like monitoring, I mean, help me out here. What would be the big gain for being able to do, you know, like a split screen or like a tiled emulator for a terminal?
Well, the biggest reasons I've seen it is A, in one terminal, you're SSH'd into a server, and on the other one, you're looking at the output of something else, or,
you know, okay, yeah, so
you know, doing like cross computer things. The other thing that I've seen is literally you can run like HTOP or another monitoring tool in one of those tabs to see what's going on, mm-hmm. and have the extra one, you know, typing at actual work. In one, you could be displaying files or folder structure, and in the other one, typing out your commands and paths kind of thing. There is reasons for it, but I will say it's the kind of thing that I don't know if you realize you need until you try.
Well,
and then if you try, then you might become dependent on it.
Well, yeah, like I said, the monitoring was the thing that came to mind with me, but also because I got to be honest, I'm not that good with
words.
Oh, hush your mouth. Directory
Navigation. Couldn't help it.
Dude. Directory navigation. Oh. And you know, because it, much like my very first experience with the command line back on the old Commodore 64, because I it's been so long since I've told this story. But anyway, one of my cousins, because it was his computer, but he told me if I typed in the wrong thing, I would melt the computer so to not touch it, which was genius because, you know, he was a teenager. I was like a small kid. I was like, oh, I don't want to touch it. So, like, I was instinctually afraid of the command line up until, you know, maybe 10 years ago. I was like, oh, I don't want to mess anything up. But when it comes to, you know, files structure and a directory structure and trees, I think of my awful experience with my Tandy 1000 computer from Radio Shack, because you want to talk about an awful file structure, just trying to find and navigate, you know, saving files on that thing. That was a nightmare for me. So yes, but specifically when you're talking about, you know, maybe viewing directories and navigating files on another while having another terminal up and available to input commands in, that is a basic user use case, in my opinion, for that. So yeah, that definitely helped me out.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing I like encourage people not to try unless you're willing to need it for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, like I'm sure that once I tried it, I'd be like, well, I can't go back now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like could you go back to just using one browser tab?
Technically, yes, but then I'll have multiple browsers. Yeah.
Tabs, sure. Windows, no.
Yeah, no.
All right, cool. All right. Oh, yes. Okay, I'm very excited about this next one because, what is it called? Wekken?
I believe that's how it's pronounced, and I can't believe you're asking me how to pronounce it.
How to install and use Wekken, the best self-hosted Trello alternative. And for those of you who don't know, Trello is an awesome project management tool that's free to use online up to a certain number of users. And I've been it was something that we used in Podnets probably like 4 years ago, I think it was. For a little while, it was something we dabbled in, but didn't really stick with. But I use this at work for task management on the team, task management tracking, and some project management on the team that I manage at my 9-to-5. And I gotta say, Trello, I'm speaking of specifically, and it's fantastic because we can use it on a variety of devices. We can use it locally there. At the location, on tablets, I can view progress from my personal device by logging in. And of course, it's all, you know, accessible from any browser too. So yeah, overall, it's been great. So when I saw this, I got kind of giddy, rubbed my hands together. So yeah, lay it on me, Dor.
Here's the gimmick. I'm starting to trust, believe, have faith in not having to host everything on my internal network. In getting DigitalOcean droplets, $5 a month. I mean, it's really hard to beat $5 a mm-hmm. month. And because if I'm the only one using this, which really, there's no reason why you can't use this by yourself. You don't have to have a team for this. And when I first did this test, I swore you need a team. Maybe it was because I was watching too much Silicon Valley on HBO, but I thought we needed a team. I'm now very tempted to just spin up a DigitalOcean droplet and install this on it. And just try to use it for my own organizational management kind of thing. Because there is no one way to organize things and be perfect. We all have our own likes and dislikes and things that helps us and the way that we think to lay stuff out. I really am tempted to try this one again. I've never heard of it though. And that's the thing. I've heard of Trello and I've heard of a couple other ones because our passed away friend, Matthew Lord D., he used to love this kind of software. And every time he saw one, he would like send it to my way saying, this one looks cool. That one looks cool. I tried this one. I like this one, but this is one I've never heard of. So I'm guessing it is really newer.
Yeah. And then this, you can also, install and host locally as opposed to having it just be an online web service. So that is going to curb a lot of the worry and wonder that we have to deal with in this day and age of becoming dependent upon a tool and having, you know, its maker just kill it or not support it after a number of years. But yeah, I've used it. Like I said, I use it at work and I'm just starting to, it was just about a week ago. I started another Trello account just to start to manage projects at home because I saw the impact that it was having at work and helping me organize, especially like the micro tasks leading to the completion of something bigger. you know, because like whenever you go to start anything in life, whether it's, you know, cleaning up your garage or, you know, starting a big project at work, what have you, it's always, you just kind of take a look at the big picture and go, oh, geez, okay. All right. But if you just start chipping away at it, you know, here and there, and dedicate a little bit of time, eventually it can get done. But having a tool like this, especially for teamwork, for assignment, follow-up, accountability, all that, it works fantastic. So this is something that I would love to try. In fact, I think that this would serve me better at home because I can get the experience of installing it, running it, hosting it locally while still having a lot of the functionality. And I'm sure that as far as what you can do with inside Trello and all the options, I've barely scratched the surface because, like with any piece of software, I just figure out kind of how to use it on the fly and figure out what I need to do. It's a lot of like what I do with video editors, you know, because it's like a huge tool belt. It can be a bit overwhelming at first, but you can figure out how to get what you need to do done, and then every little thing you fold in from there or learn along the way, it's just going to make that experience much better. So yeah, if you, based on what I've said about Trello, have a need for something like that, I would definitely urge you to check them out, but also consider this as an option as well, because it's something that you know won't go away.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you own it. And yep. If you want, you don't have to upgrade it, and you don't have to worry about it breaking.
You don't need to worry about it looking orange.
Yeah.
You don't need to worry about flickering issues. None of that.
Yeah. I will say the only thing, you know, negative. Every time I'm looking at screenshots of this thing, okay, not every time, just some of the times, I'm seeing what I consider to be too many rounded corners. And it, you know, it's kind of like bow ties. I truly believe you shouldn't believe anybody who wears a bow tie because they're evil. And I think when people have applications with too many curved corners in it, they're trying to hide something. Yeah, I don't know. But it looks like I'm seeing screenshots where there isn't curves.
It's so funny you mentioned the bow tie thing. So. Do you remember the old the comedy from the early 90s, Problem Child?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and do you remember in that film, the first one, The Bow Tie Killer?
Oh, yeah.
He was played by Michael Richards, a.k.a. Kramer.
Yeah.
So my wife saw it. It came on Netflix. I think it was Netflix recently. And she had our five-year-old watch it, and which is, I kind of questioned that decision, but whatever, she's made bad decisions before. She'll make more in the future. Anyway, now he's going around the house quoting this movie, being a little more of a wiseacre than normal. And I just kind of look at her and I go, "You see what you've done? You see it?" But yeah, inside that film, yeah, the bow tie killer, not being able to trust him. Then when the little kid puts on the bow tie too, yeah, it definitely adds a bit of a creepiness factor, doesn't it? It's almost like you just can't take him seriously.
Yeah, I mean, historically, when I look at pictures of people wearing bow ties, typically it's people that shouldn't have been trusted. I'm just saying. It just so happens. I mean, the only, and I think this is propaganda from a government directly, because, you know, the BBC is owned by the government over there. Doctor Who wears a bow tie, and I think it's trying to soften the impression of people who wear bow ties, and I'm not buying it.
They're trying to retroactively inject it into the consciousness of the world, is what they're doing. I get it.
Maybe it's the attitude of being a pre-hipster, like trying to do it before it was hipster and it didn't have a name. I don't know. And I'm sure I just completely PO'd lots of people out there for how dare I speak bad about the Whovian experience, but it's just a show.
And remember, if you don't like any of the comments made about this on this episode, or on past episodes, please send an email to steve@smd.net.
Yeah, he'll take care of everything.
He sure will.
Okay, this next one here in the notes, I'm utterly skeptical of. Just like when I turn on the TV and I see an ad for Ghost Hunters, makes me a little skeptical. Just for some reason, you know, a little skeptical. This also makes me really skeptical because I've seen these things for 5 years now, and they almost all completely suck. The only one that came close to doing it right, to be honest, was Remix OS offers a Windows executable where you can run Android apps on a Windows OS, but it really is containerized in that OS, and they come close to doing a really good job. Here's one called Anbox, A-N-B-O-X. BlueStacks is the one that they first mentioned in the notes, and that was the one that completely sucked for years, and it was made by the people who made BIOSes. I believe it was I want to say AMD, but it was an old America Megatrends. The old BIOS company was the same company making BlueStacks, I'm pretty sure. And it was just horrible experience. So many of the apps just wouldn't load. And when they did load, you would have random things on the screen glitching and flicking and twitching. And because you didn't have a GPS, because you didn't have a gyroscope, because you don't have a camera, because you don't have a light sensor, because you don't have all the hardware that's on your phone that these things expect, it's really hard to get a good experience. I would like it if these people did it right, but I haven't had a chance to check this out yet. But I am really, really skeptical.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how it pans out.
Yeah, I would like to try it, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to reinstall both these operating systems on both these computers here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, how long has it been? You've been running both of those for a long time now, haven't you? I mean, years.
No, the laptop is quote unquote new. I've only had it maybe 6 months.
Oh, maybe. Okay. Oh, you're talking about the Yoga?
No, the ThinkPad 420, the 6-plus-year-old computer.
Yes.
That's actually my main rig down here. And then the desktop, I do believe it's been about 2 years. That's the one that's streaming right now.
Mm, okay. Hmm. Well, it never hurts to try something a little new every now and then, Dor. Except your problem is the fact that you literally have another show to record tomorrow. So
and the next day.
Yes.
Oh, and really quick, mm-hmm. I've said this podcast, this site, this service more than a couple times in the past. I'm going to say it again for a selfish reason. DistroWatch.com. Bruce Patterson, one of the unbelievably best guys I've ever hung with, talked with,
awesome guy,
interacted with, and learned from, is one of the things I'll say. He is the voice of the DistroWatch podcast. He interviewed me. Basically, we just chatted. It wasn't really an interview. We talked last Saturday while we were re-recording it, and I'm pretty sure it's going to go out on the next DistroWatch podcast. And Bruce wants me back on again this week, and he is insinuating until we find stuff not worth talking about, he wants me on every week on that podcast.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, I can't wait to hear that. Yeah, for those of you who don't know Bruce Patterson, I mean, first of all, fantastic voice. But if you ever have the pleasure of meeting him in person, he is, I mean, I can say this honestly, and I don't say this about a lot of people, but he is a real treasure of a guy. I mean, just all around, great in so many areas. I mean, great stories, very, I mean, just a very, a sweet, kind man who has a lot to give in the way of knowledge. And, I mean, touring his office at Harvard was awesome. Hanging out with him, especially some of his post office stories that he had. You know what I'm talking about.
The chef?
No, see, I thought it was chef because I was telling it to someone earlier.
The cook?
No, it might have been the chef, but I didn't think it was it. Anyway, why don't you do this? The next episode you're on, just say, hey, Cody Cooper had a quick question about the name of that guy in that post office story, and then just have him answer the name, and that's all I need.
I'm not sure I can say that on the show. But,
okay.
I'll say this.
I'll get a hold of him.
For the most part, we don't talk about Linux. Linux comes into the conversation because we're both Linux people.
Mm-hmm.
We both used to be Linux advocates. We both used to be free software advocates. We came to a realization that these are computers and the bonds we have with them should only go so far. The faith we should have in the people that use them and run them and organize them and direct them should be limited. And we talk about all kinds of stuff. Like, one of the topics I want to bring up is the future of podcasting. And how we are approaching a incredibly venomous and poisonous era that can ruin podcasting for a lot of good people.
What are you, I mean, not to go down this rabbit hole too far, but what are you referring to?
Money and fame and mass media market
just so
encroaching on this small batch
locally sorry yeah, yeah. So just overall the corporatization of it as a platform now that's become more popular, like the big boys are, I mean, they've already started to try and swoop in. I mean, there's one podcast mm-hmm. that I listen to where I know that the host has been approached and or threatened on shutting down their operations on their show, and while at the same time just sticking with smaller sponsors because that's who supported this person for years and it has a huge fan base. So when you look at it as a platform, I mean, obviously a lot of it is more leaning toward video and then releasing an audio version of the show, which I'm not averse to that. But yeah, seeing how it's matured in the past, I think this is probably my 10th year. Actually, it's probably my 9th year of even being aware of what a podcast was, my 6th year as a podcaster. But I couldn't imagine not having it around as a platform because of the sheer possibilities and options available. So I think that eventually it will still continue to thrive, but you'll start to see more definitely boxed in corporate versions of shows pop up. But I think a lot of that is going to hopefully fall by the wayside, just because anybody who's already been consuming this type of media for a while will kind of look at that stuff and go, whatever. And they're just not subscribed to it anymore.
I really wish I could have that look, that jubilantly positive outlook. I believe it's going to become unbelievably skeezy and sleazy, and people are going to get used to hearing 5 ads in a half an hour that are extremely impersonal and fake, and just accept it. Because this is that guy from that show, or this is that person from that music group, or this is that person kind of thing. Because celebrities by default have what seems like extremely low morals and ethics. A huge percentage of them, when in reality, it's probably just a huge percentage of people. But I know when I listen to homegrown podcasts, when I listen to people, individuals, first and foremost, fans of podcasts, doing podcasts, I hear a certain authenticity
and
that I don't hear replicated in near any celebrity podcast.
And passion.
Yeah, and like heartfelt passion, real passion, yeah. Not, okay, now let's do this. And literally, like, some of them have literally teams of 20 people mm-hmm. working on the podcast. Mm-hmm. How much money do you have to generate? How many people do you have to rip off? How hard do you have to lie about your stats? How many people do you have to buffalo into believing how many followers you have when it turns out, 40%+ of the people on Twitter are fake? It's a very skeezy, sleazy thing approaching, and I really hope that I and the valued listeners that like listen to Podnut shows muscle through it.
Yeah. I think, well, what it boils down to is this: content is king, period.
Supposed to be.
Well, no, it is.
But money has a way of making people change their mind. And listen, there are podcasts out there that can give away cars, Cody.
Oh, I know that.
People will listen for that.
But once again, That in itself is content within the content. So some people will listen to ads. They'll make the conscious decision to do that. Now, what I don't think we're going to see, and one of the things that kind of you're alluding to, is a possible doomsday scenario, which you, as the old guy who sits on his lawn and shoots, his hose at kids walking in his grass type of mentality, which I respect because I love you like a brother, are alluding to, is the fact that it's all going to end up being like that. And then I could throw the question to you, would be, okay, well, if you think that's the case, will Podnuts be like that within 5 years?
Not if I have anything to say about it.
That's right.
If I die, then yes, it's very well it could
be. Right. So it's all going to be within the eye of the beholder, or within the scope of whoever's running the show, literally. Because I can tell you,
well,
go ahead.
Yeah, I really don't worry about me. I really don't worry about podcasts like Going Linux. I really don't worry about podcasts like Sunday Morning Linux Review. There's a lot of podcasts I don't worry about because they're going to be just fine. I worry about the listeners, and I worry about them becoming, in the lightest way I can put it, is diluted and polluted.
Or complicit in like a big change like this. But at the same time, I mean, you know, even in another 5 years, you know, you're going to have, you know, kids who were, you know, in elementary school, now in, you know, junior high and high school, who are probably going to be consuming more of that media anyway. So having landscape shift and change is going to, I mean, that's just inevitable. But we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But at the same time, you can't, you know, put your head down and worry. And because I know that, in fact, the only podcast listening and media consuming behaviors that I can 100% control are my own, period.
Well, I know, but every opportunity in life, different answers are the right answers. Sometimes you're supposed to lead. Sometimes you're supposed to follow. And sometimes you're just supposed to get out of the way. I don't know which is the right one. And yes, that was quoting Idiocracy, at least somewhat.
Right.
Because it's going to be a battleground. And sometimes you just don't want to get shot in the head.
Right.
Because I do think it's going to become a very fisticuff thing, where right now I believe, and I don't know if I'm deluded, that we're in this together. I want other podcasts to succeed. I want every host on this network, and I wrote this in an email today to what I consider to be a good friend. I want every host, every participant, every Podnutsian who is ever on a show, who hosts a show, or who contacts us, what I want to make them, enable them to be bigger, better, smarter, more productive, and more successful than Podnuts themselves, period. Because I know people personally that can achieve much greater things than what I've been able to do with Podnuts, i.e. there's a lot of room for growth, and I'm trying my damnedest, but I also know I'm not the best, and I just want to try to help other people do it. Whether it's sending emails into SMLR, the real reason I'm sending them emails isn't because I want my email heard on the air. It's because I know everybody can get better, and I want to push them towards that in any shape, way, or form. And sometimes it's just genuine feedback, because I know feedback brings joy. Speaking of that, I'm sure we've missed like 5, 8, maybe 20 emails that we haven't brought to this show. And it is my fault, I'll say.
Well, all of that stems from one important thing, is that you care. And I can say that as a previous and current listener and someone that has contributed on a number of shows in the network, you have made a big impact in my life. In a number of ways. I mean, even if I never met you, even if I was only a listener, it would have been a big impact. And anybody that has listened to a show or has latched on and, you know, got to know us as people and personalities, to look forward to, you know, the different things that, the different hosts bring throughout the network. I mean, I can, you know, look at, you know, Matt Rainey with his expertise and his, here's the thing I really like about all of us, because I can't think of, no, even Scott Moulton does this. We all have our own little senses of humor that we bring to the shows. And when I was trying to think of like the most serious and professional, I defaulted to Scott Moulton, because he's an industry leading, you know, hard drive expert and forensics and all that too. But even he's cracked jokes on the show before and laughed. And I think that speaks to the fun that we're having these conversations with ourselves. And you and I have spoke about this. We'd probably be talking about this stuff anyway. The fact that we're recording it and releasing it and people are getting anything out of it, is icing on the cake for us. And we do love hearing from those who have supported us in the past or just like the content, because as this network has evolved over the years, it's gotten quite big.
Well, yeah. And speaking of content, I did launch a brand new show, mm-hmm. DDG, podnuts.com, just DDG, if you want to check it out. Timing is everything. Timing is weird. I'm not one of those people that believe fate and things happen for a reason kind of thing. But once in a while, I just got to sit back and just be in awe of how timing seems to be random happenstance just randomly happens to happen. I just released episode 1. I released episode 0, which is just, hi, everybody. I released episode 1, and episode 1 is hopefully the saddest podcast I ever release, and I never have to release anything like that ever again. If you go to podnuts.com/Amazon, you're not going to be redirected to Amazon. you're going to be redirected to that episode one of that podcast. And in that podcast, I will say, I explain why we don't have an Amazon affiliate account anymore. And if anyone has been a fan of Linux podcasts in the past, then you should notice there's more than a couple podcasts, there's more than a couple websites that had very successful, I have to believe, Amazon affiliate links, and then all of a sudden they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to Jupiter Broadcasting. One of the podcast networks I'm not the biggest fan of, but I know one thing, Chris works his ass off, okay? And he had an Amazon affiliate, and when he lost his Amazon affiliate due to false reporting, he was livid. He had to be livid, because I'm sure he lost a lot of money, because Amazon affiliate payments are always 3 months behind, so he lost those 3 months of money, never to be seen again. And after that, I can tell you, his attitude changed. He was much more bullish on getting paid advertisers on his shows, mm-hmm. because he had to make up for that lost income. Podnuts now has lost income, period. Never getting it back in. Gone. History. And there's literally is no telling how much that could have brought into the network. Literally, if I'm alive another 40 years, there's no reason why it couldn't have brought in $50,000 in that length of time, because I think it would have only gotten more popular.
Yeah, and
so we don't have that anymore, right. But we're trying to do other things.
Mm-hmm. And this is the perfect time for us to announce that we will be going to 5 ads every 10 minutes. I'm just kidding. We're not gonna do that. I'm not trying to take the wind out of your sails here, Dor. But we were speaking about this, and this has been a recurring theme that we've spoken about too, is that what Chris went through, and even Brian Lungduk went through something similar when he had all of his software on the Apple what was then the iTunes store. Anyway, is that it, and it boils down to, don't have all your eggs in one basket. Because I didn't know this, but you, when it comes to contesting having your Amazon affiliate link account closed, there are no options. And it says so right in the initial email from them. Like, there is no arbitration. This decision is final, done, regardless of what happened, regardless of what was presented to them, or regardless of if a tiny mistake was made that could have been corrected. It's just over and done with. So, you know, we have to move on. So I downloaded both of those episodes earlier because I have a new install that I'm putting G-Potter onto, so I can start listening more podcasts just in my office, because I find myself going through YouTube spirals, and it's just bad news. So I'd rather use that background noise as something productive and going through and listening to more podcasts. Because I've kind of fallen on the wayside of that. But I'm definitely going to commit to listening to that tonight, because I know that you and I have talked about some ideas on how to compensate for that loss. And as what you were saying earlier, a lot of that will also keep our community in mind, as to not inundate them with stuff that just doesn't make sense. Because I can speak from my personal experience. I know some of the offers that we've gotten as a network of products to push, or how often or how hard, and some of those have been turned down, whereas some other, you know, shows aren't necessarily bringing those specific products onto their show, but maybe are advertising products that maybe don't make the best of sense for their listenership.
Yeah, I mean, I've turned down, honestly, I don't even know how many now, ad sponsorships. And I'm not talking, hey, I like your sports article on your website, can I put an ad on it type of email? No, I don't mean that. I mean genuine companies that we've heard of sending emails asking about listenership and wanting to do a sponsorship, to where I tell them, thank you very much for the opportunity, but I don't think at this time this is something that we should look into anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be nice about it. Because there are certain companies I just do not want to be connected with, affiliated with. That's just it. I will say, if you're looking for time killer podcast, Cody, SpokenEdition.com. If you go there, it's 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 38 different podcasts you can subscribe to. Some of them, there's no way you're going to want to listen to. Some of them I think will be very interesting. What it is they take quote unquote interesting articles off of websites, everything from Life Hacker, Time Magazine, TechCrunch, Playboy, Slate, I believe Mashable. And they basically have somebody read it out loud.
Okay.
So, you know, it, to me, it's a nice way to get news. Like if you ever did the Google, okay, Charlie, good morning thing to your Android device with the new Google Assistant on it, you'll get like a daily rundown of news and stuff. That's what this is kind of like, where you can get like Time, TechCrunch, Huffington Post, Slate, all these things, and just listen to these articles. It's usually the day after they've been posted, so it isn't extremely topical stuff, but it's at least something typically 3 to 5 minutes. So you can, you know, do 10 of them and you get a good solid half hour or more of content.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely check them out. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to checking out your new show, especially listening to that episode, so I can kind of get caught up on some stuff here. Well, that's really all we had for this week, Dor. I would say let's mention this, but we were having some issues with that earlier, so maybe not. as always, if you're in the market for a new computer and or maybe a networking type of device, head over to thinkpenguin.com. If you do find something on there that would fit your needs and you're looking for a little bit of discount, send an email to the show at podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. We have some coupon codes we can give away. They're a great group of guys we've met on several occasions building their own machines and have their own standards for what they want to not only support but sell. And definitely to contribute back to the community by doing that. So you could be supporting the community and supporting a good project in the cause. All right. If you want to send in a voicemail to the show, which we haven't gotten in a while, once again, the number is 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Just keep it to a minute or two if you can, and we'll definitely play it on the show and respond accordingly. And head over to podnuts.com if you haven't lately, because especially if you haven't been there in a year or so, or just kind of perused the site, a physical layout as of about a year ago, but there are some new shows there that you might not be aware of, some old shows that you may be able to rediscover, and some new content coming down the pike very soon. So please check that out. Any parting words, Dor, before we go ahead and end the show?
No, just thanks for everything, Cody.
Oh, thank you for everything. It's been a pleasure. And we're back in the groove with this show. Very, very happy to be doing it because I'm more active in my technology endeavors whenever I'm on this show. So it's always very, very, very fun for me. So can't wait to hear from you guys and what you thought of this show or what you think of the new DDG show as well. Excuse me. Looking forward to that. And please do not forget that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.